Researchers at the National Institutes of Health say a vaccine they've been testing for the Ebola virus appears to be safe so far, and that a clinical study in West Africa could happen in early 2015. Too good to be true? Well, for more on what this all means for the fight against Ebola now and later, we turn to Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of NIH's National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases. Dr. Fauci, great to have you back.
Good to be with you.
All right. So tell us what's been going on so far. When I was reading the New England Journal of Medicine article on this, which was partially written by one of your researchers, Dr. Nancy Sullivan, it says that it appears to be safe. That means that it, what, didn't make anybody sick?
Well, that's right. There were no immediate adverse events that would be prohibitive for going ahead, because when you're doing a vaccine, which you ultimately hope to give to a very large number of people, you want to make sure first that it's safe. But the other important part of the study was the answering of the question, does it induce the kind of response in this relatively small number of normal volunteers that you would predict would be protective? Namely, does it resemble the kind of response that we showed in an animal model to be actually protective against challenge with Ebola? And the answer is that, A, it was safe, and it did induce this kind of response, which means you get the go-ahead for the next phase of the study, which is a much larger study, to actually ask the really important question and the proof of the pudding, does it work? Does it actually protect people against Ebola? And that's the next step. What we reported on was the first step in a multi-step process of developing a vaccine.
Yeah, the article said positive response rates with respect to the development of the Ebola-specific antibodies and T-cell responses. That's what you're looking for when you give the test dose to the healthy patients, correct?
That is absolutely correct, because those are the things, those are the mechanisms in the body that will ultimately and hopefully protect you against Ebola, and those are the things that were measured in the volunteers who were vaccinated.
Now, those volunteers, I guess, won't be exposed to Ebola, but how do you test if those antibodies will in fact protect against Ebola?
Well, that's the proof of the pudding of why you do a large clinical trial. You vaccinate people who are at risk in West Africa, the people right now who are being exposed to naturally occurring Ebola, and you determine if, in fact, this vaccine does protect them. And that's how you get your answer in a standard classical clinical trial.
And so who will conduct that? Will that be NIH people over there? Will it be the Army, or will it be people indigenous?
A good question. It will be the NIH leading the study in Liberia together with the Liberian health authorities in collaboration with the people from GlaxoSmithKline, which are our partners. And there's a second vaccine that's going to be tested that's similar that we're also testing here. But also there'll be a trial in Sierra Leone, very likely run by the CDC. So there'll be a few trials asking the same question, does this vaccine work?
Now, the article also mentioned that even though Ebola has been known to be a phenomenon for several decades, this is the first time the occurrence of it has actually provoked the concern that it might be a national, international danger.
Well, yes, this is unquestionably the worst outbreak in history. This was first recognized, Ebola, in 1976. There have been about two dozen outbreaks over the years from 76 to the present time. If you look at this outbreak, it is much larger than all of the other outbreaks combined. This is involving multiple countries, highly populated areas, dense cities like Monrovia in Liberia and Freetown in Sierra Leone. So this is really unprecedented compared to the relatively smaller outbreaks that have been well controlled in the past.
And you're working with DOD, I understand, also.
Yes. In fact, one of the vaccines that we will be testing, a vaccine that is made by a company called NewLink, has been developed with very heavy input from the Department of Defense, and they'll be partnering with us in the trial of that vaccine.
All right. So then you think this trial could begin over there by the end of this year or early next year?
Very likely no sooner than, I would say, mid-January. That's when we're planning on starting it. We're working out some of the logistics with the Liberian health officials.
And so just to get to some detail of this, and we know it produces the antibodies, and so it would be administered to a larger population that is exposed to Ebola. Then what? Do you deliberately get people near Ebola?
No. That would be unethical. There is enough risk right now in these West African countries, particularly among healthcare workers, people who are manning the facilities, people who are being involved in the caring for bodies, relatives and contacts of people who are getting Ebola. There's plenty of Ebola in West Africa right now that it would give the opportunity to see if it works.
We're speaking with Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at NIH. And getting back to the 20 volunteers you had here locally to test it, apparently they had some slight occurrence of fever,
right,
which lasted about a day. Did you have instances of people saying, oh, my God, what the heck did you do to me here? I'm getting a fever.
No, not at all. In fact, the fevers, there were two people who developed fevers, both of which were controlled within 24 hours by simple antipyretic drugs. So there was not any concern about it. I mean, obviously you would like to see no adverse events at all. These would be considered as minor adverse events that wouldn't prohibit our going ahead.
So about 10% of the people, that's about as many people as sometimes get a little slightly symptomatic from a flu vaccine.
Exactly, exactly. So when you give a vaccine, the very common effects that you would see with almost any vaccine, not all, but many, is a sore arm, and occasionally someone will get a very brief feeling of feeling flushed, and sometimes when you take their temperature, they have a fever. That's not uncommon. That's not the kind of thing that would prohibit going ahead. You'd like to see none of that, but it happens.
And so looking at this whole effort to date now, the identification of this, the occurrence of it in a couple of cases in the United States, and I guess the rushed development or the sped-up development of this whole vaccine, what has the NIH itself learned from this?
Well, what we do is we try and understand the disease. It's called pathogenesis, which we study and have been studying for several years in an animal model and on the occasion when there's an outbreak. But importantly, the end game for us is to develop better diagnostics, better drugs, which we call therapeutics to treat, and vaccines to prevent. And we're doing all of those three. So we're very actively involved right now, focusing very much on the development of a vaccine.
But it seems like there's also been some lessons learned about just public health administration that might be fine-tuned also.
Well, of course. I mean, we've had experience before with Ebola, but not to this extent with such a large, dramatic outbreak. Some of the things that we learned in the past have been confirmed. We know how it is spread. It is spread by direct contact with body fluids like blood and diarrhea and vomit from an individual, which is the reason why healthcare workers are at much more risk than the general population, because they put themselves in harm's way to take care of these people. We've learned about the clinical course. We've learned that if you give people really good care and replace their fluids, that the mortality can dramatically come down. The mortality of Ebola is scary. It's anywhere from 50 to 90%, which is totally unprecedented for almost any viral disease, but that's what Ebola is. Yet, if you get people into the care where you can replace their fluids and keep them in the right balance with fluids and electrolytes, you can sharply decrease the mortality. We've had the opportunity to treat several patients here in the United States now, which is unprecedented. We never had. We had a patient here at the NIH that we took care of, who, like several of the other patients taken care of at Emory and at Nebraska and at Bellevue, that when you give them good care, good intensive medical care, you can definitely decrease the mortality.
Has this been kind of an all-hands-on-deck type of effort for the NIH and particularly your unit there?
Oh, absolutely. This has occupied us 24/7 now for the past couple of months, several months, starting off. I mean, the epidemic started in Guinea and in earnest in March. It started to really accelerate during the summer. And I would say for the last few months, at least since early August, end of July, this has been 24/7 for us.
So will you and Dr. Frieden and maybe Dr. Sullivan get a little time off after after the stuff goes over to the other side of the ocean?
It doesn't work that way. it's not really time off. You're just trying to get the job done, and hopefully we will. We're not out of the woods yet, so before we start thinking about time off, we better do our job and get it done, get this under control.
You know, I have to admit, I was reading Ashton Carter's biography today as he's been nominated for Defense Secretary, and he has a medieval history degree. And so I did a little quick research on medieval times, and the controlling factor, really, of that era was the Black Plague, which killed about a third of the people in Europe.
Correct.
Was there any time in this when you thought to yourself, golly, is there any chance of something like this happening again?
Well, certainly not with Ebola, because you can control Ebola by good identification, isolation, and contact tracing. So that's the reason why Ebola strikes in countries where they do not have a healthcare system where they can do that kind of isolation and contact tracing, and reason why we feel confident, actually, that if we do it right, there won't be a major outbreak at all in the developed world. However, there are other threats, things like a pandemic influenza, which can spread in a way that can give you a historic situation like we had years ago with other great diseases like the pandemic flu of 1918, which was as devastating in many respects as the plague.
All right, so but maybe Africa and some of those nations have learned from what the United States can do for the types of things it's dealing with, such as Ebola right now.
That's correct. And one of the things that we've knew all along, but it was underscored, is that if we want to prevent this from happening in the developing world, Africa, Southern Africa, and other places, we've got to build up their healthcare systems. This would not have happened in West Africa had they had the capability and the infrastructure to handle the initial cases before they had widespread outbreak. And that's really unfortunate because poor countries who don't have that infrastructure very often suffer disproportionately because of these types of diseases.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. As always, thanks so much for joining us.
You're quite welcome. Good to be with you.